Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for Saturday, October 3rd, 2009. And something is wrong with the connection. I'm trying to see if I can fix this. Let me start over. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for Saturday, October 31st, 2009. I am your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Today I'm honored to bring Dolores Thornton, author of the book Ida Mae, Babe, Anybody Seen Junebug, Airing Dirty Laundry, Divine Appointment, A Caregiver's Guide, and how to self-publish that great novel without going nuts. And it seems like the technological problem is over. Thank you, Lord. Dolores is also a mother, a grandmother, a gifted writer, and a businesswoman. So welcome to Off the Shelf, Dolores Thornton.
Hey, hi, Denise. What's going on?
It's so good to have you here with us and have you back. Oh, what a blessing. I wanted to ask you just to say, this is the second interview I've done where I've connected with a friend. Last show we did was with Tanya Ortiz Lopez, who's just a wonderful soul like you are. And what a blessing, I said to myself, to be interviewing somebody, a wonderful, talented author and a wonderful person again. So it's just so good to be talking to you. You have done so much. There's so much to cover in this interview. I wanted to start by asking you about your classic book, Ida Mae. Oh my goodness, I love this story. I love this character and some of your other books we're going to talk about. If you could just tell our listeners here at Off the Shelf who aren't familiar with Ida Mae, which I consider truly a classic, could you just share with us briefly what Ida Mae is about?
Yeah, I would love to. Actually, the story of Ida Mae came to me in like late 1995, and it's the story of a young girl of color that's adopted by a white family in a rural southern town after her parents are deceased, and she goes through some of everything. She grows up like in country and western music, and, you know, she really has to pay for that from the black community, and there's a rape involved, and she has serious issues that she has to overcome, but she is an endearing person, and people across the nation and, you know, even throughout the world fell in love with that character of Ida Mae. I was so proud of that.
Oh, my goodness. Just anybody who hasn't read that book, I highly recommend it. And again, I consider it a true classic. I wanted to ask you, where did the idea for the story come from?
Well, you know what? I actually believe that it was really somewhat of divine intervention because, you know, I didn't have any writing experience or anything at that time. I later went on and, you know, went back to school and took additional writing courses. But when the story of Ida Mae came to me, I was just, you know, sitting there on my sofa minding my own business. You know, and then, you know, I started writing and I was like, sounds good. And I was taking it by my sisters, and she was like, "Ooh, this sounds good." And it was like, well, it was a little short story or something. And then I just kept on building on it, and everybody that read the little manuscript wanted to read more, and that's how it just really blossomed, you know. But actually, the character of Ida Mae, after I stepped back and looked at it, she embodied so many different characteristics of people in my family. She was my sister that I lost to cancer in 1988. She was my dad that I lost in 82. She was just a lot of strong people in my life.
Oh, she is an amazing, amazing character. That's a book I would definitely keep recommending. I know that you are also a mother, a grandmother, and I just found out early this morning, also a great-grandmother. What a blessing.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you this because I hear women, and my grandmother actually did this, who don't go after their dreams because they have children or grandchildren. They just don't do it. And then they get older and they'll, like my grandmother said, she wished she had gone to college to become a school teacher, which was sad to me, and I could tell she was sad about it. She was in her 70s. But a lot of women put this off because they have a family. So I wanted to ask, were your children grown or still living at home when you started writing? Because I also want to, just briefly during each show here at Off the Shelf, encourage women to go after their dreams. Were your children grown and still living at home when you wrote Ida Mae?
Well, actually, all of my children were grown, and my baby was in grad school, and they tease me and tell me that, you know, since my baby was leaving and I was, like, in that empty nest syndrome thing, that I was creating another baby. Because, actually, when I birthed Ida Mae, it was like a baby because at first it's like I was doing everything for the book and everything for the story, and then it was like going through those terrible twos. I was flying all over the country trying to keep up with the baby, you know. So, you know, I was attending all the book fairs and book festivals and traveling throughout the Caribbean and everything else. So it was almost like it was a birth of something. And my kids told me, said, you know, I was so devastated when my baby left until I birthed Ida Mae to start over with motherhood.
Oh, my goodness. You got a beautiful one then. And did you always plan, Dolores, to write a sequel to Ida Mae?
No, I really didn't. When I finished the book, so many people read it, and they were like, okay, we need to know more. But when I wrote Ida Mae, it was like it came to a successful conclusion, but people were like, okay, we want more, we want more. So I did Ida Mae, and then I did Ida Mae, the saga continues that next year, because people were just really, you know, they really wanted more. And so I even killed Ida Mae. I had her die at the end of the second book, and people still weren't satisfied.
Yeah.
My sisters, they were calling me saying, why can't you have a book called Ida Mae from up in heaven, and she's looking down on us? And I was like, you know what? It's over.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my goodness. I was going to ask you if even after the sequel,
people wanted more.
That people still, because I'm one of those people, I got to tell you, that is a true classic. That book is truly a classic. And then after Ida Mae, you wrote your third book, Babe, another book that I absolutely loved. And for our listeners here who haven't read Babe, could you just give them a glimpse into what that story's about?
Yeah, Babe is based on my mother's life, and it has a lot of elements of truth, even though I fictionalized it. But it's the story of an 82 African American female who's starting to have nightmares and horrible dreams, and her daughter takes her to the doctor, and they can't find anything wrong. The doctor suggests hypnosis, and through that, her whole life unfolds, all the way back to age 5 when she witnessed a lynching and a beheading in her native Cedartown, Georgia. So it's just, you know, and Babe, through these hypnotic sessions, she takes the reader back through everything, the civil rights era, you know, the depression, all the way back to 1922.
Wow. Now, did your grandmother really go through that?
Well, it was actually my mother, and yes, she did go. Yes, she lived through a lot of it. Well, she lived through that whole era, but, you know, as far as the lynching and the beheading, all my mother will ever say is that one time she saw a headless man. You know, there's never been any, you know, conclusion on our part as to what that actually means, but she was 5. And so in my story, I just have that as a lynching and a beheading, because a 5-year-old to see a person headless, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, like if someone had a hood on and they couldn't see their face to a 5-year-old, that would be a headless man.
That's
or they actually did see someone beheaded.
Yeah, you're right.
And in Cedartown, Georgia, in, you know, 1922, it could have been either one of those.
Yes. And you're right, to see it through the eyes of a 5-year-old. I was seeing it through the eyes of an adult, but you're right, to see the situation through the eyes of a 5-year-old, you wouldn't be... No, for sure, exactly. And
what
she might not remember exactly what it was that made that impression
but
upon
she
her.
She is really adamant when she tells us, you know, even to this day, you know, she still says she saw a headless man right before, you know, the family got on the train and escaped Cedartown, Georgia, and came to Indiana.
Wow. You are so busy, Dolores. I will continue to tell our listeners here at Off the Shelf, I will strongly encourage them to get Ida Mae and Babe, which they can get at Amazon.com. You are so busy. At one point I thought, wow, this woman is just working. Oh my God, does she sleep? Not long after Babe was released, you wrote Anybody Sing Junebug, and I read that. And there's scenes in Anybody Sing Junebug which are comical. Your sense of humor comes through in parts of your story, even though you're dealing with serious issues, serious real-life issues in your books. But this book, Anybody Sing Junebug, in it you deal with mental health issues. And I wanted to ask, did you do a lot of research around psychology before you sat down and wrote Anybody Sing Junebug?
Well, I didn't do extensive research. Like with all of my books, I look into it, I research the subject matter, but I was really concerned because I know that in the African American community especially, people are really reluctant to seek help.
Yes.
For mental issues. And so that's always been rather taboo in our community, you know, to even try to get help for that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I realized that there was a need. And, you know, once again, that character came to me. It was actually one of the characters in Babe. I introduced Junebug in Babe. And then he becomes his own complete story in Anybody Seen Junebug, and that's the story of a man that has five different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
He's in jail, and he's retelling his life to his cellmate.
Yes, yeah, and some of the scenes are comical, and he goes through something in the end that, not to give away the story, but it's almost like his illness can either be a way out of this situation or something that could really trap him. In this situation, in the story. I wanted to ask next, how did you balance? This is a serious issue, you know, the mental health issue that he had. How did you balance presenting Junebug's his mental, psychological, and emotional challenges with the plot of the story so that the mental health issue didn't start to overwhelm the plot? How did you go about making sure that we stayed balanced?
Well, you know what? I interviewed men in my family and other men because I wanted to make sure that I was coming through from a male perspective in some of the characters. And then I might just say this, in Junebug, he even has female characters. He plays a set of aunts. Twin aunts, you know, so he actually has that to deal with. So, you know, it was a lot of humor in there for me. It was seriousness. And, you know, to maintain that balance, it was rather difficult at times. But again, that came to me relating to every character and making sure that nobody overpowered the central thought of the story.
It's interesting that you would go and speak to the men in your family. I would just be curious to know how many writers actually do that. Do you do that with each book, or did you just do that with Junebug, that you would speak, if you're writing about an older character, you would speak to an older person if you were writing
Actually, I do. Whatever character that I'm trying to bring forth, I actually step into that person's life and into that person's role. And back to Ida Mae, when I did the book on Ida Mae, there was a scene in a nursing home. I actually went to a nursing home so I could smell the cleaners and get that nursing home smell. So when I got back, I would know how to really describe, you know, there was a man in Ida Mae that ran an old shoe shop, and I went to a shoe shop here in the city that still had the old foot pedals on the old Landers, stitching machines, and, you know, the brown bags they used to put the shoes in, and, you know, I even incorporated some of those brown bag things in the story of Ida Mae. So whatever area or whatever character, the same thing with Divine Appointment, A Caregiver's Guide. I actually went to Crown Hill Funeral Home and shadowed the funeral director. So the things that I spoke of would be so true. And people always say that my books are really descriptive because I actually become those characters.
Okay. That's something that I've done too. Not every book I've written, because Portia takes place in Chicago, and I don't recall.
Yeah, and I love that.
I might have just passed through Chicago, but I don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
But there were people from Chicago who swore that I was from there. And the same with Spiral. People swore that you had to be from Memphis. And
right.
But to do the research for the story, because you do want to make it be authentic. What was the reader response to Anybody Seen Junebug?
Oh, people loved it. Loved it. I mean, they even loved the cover because, you know, on the cover, I had a friend's face, and then I had it, like, superimposed on five different bodies of all of his personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And people just fell in. It was just so funny, you know. But some people didn't even get it. Like, when I took it to work, I was working at that time before I retired. People were like, oh, is this, you know, a picture of your family on the cover? And I was like, what? I said, that's one face on all five of those bodies, and some of those bodies are women, you know. And that's a man, you know. But, yeah, but... but most people, more often than not, people got into the side of how humorous it was. You know, I didn't get a lot of comments on, you know, the mental and medical aspects of the book. And, you know, I just hope that that wasn't lost to people, even though, you know, it was kind of like a lighthearted comedy, but it still had, you know, like we were discussing mental health issues.
Yeah, you didn't put a heavy foot on that, which I think was good for the readership. If it was a book, you know, that was specifically for people who have relatives who had an issue, which they can read it as well, or somebody going through that. It was light enough, but you took it seriously enough to give not make it a joke of it, but,
right,
so that it could help move the story forward. A year after you published Anybody Seen Junebug, you came out with Divine Appointment, which you mentioned briefly, A Caregiver's Guide. And this was a nonfiction story, and this was one of your books I did not read. But was Divine Appointment A Caregiver Guide? Was that your first nonfiction work?
Yeah, that was my first attempt at nonfiction.
Okay. Did you find that transition, Dolores, going from fiction you had written at that point, that was you had written four fiction novels, that transition from fiction to nonfiction, I've heard that style of writing is different. It's very different writing nonfiction versus writing fiction. Did you find that transition challenging? And if so, how was that challenging for you?
Well, no, I didn't find it challenging because before that, I had taken a writing course, and so I had to deal with fiction, nonfiction articles, and, you know, to be well-rounded, it said that you need to be able to write in all genres and from all different, you know, aspects of writing. You should know, cover all different aspects, so it really wasn't difficult, and at the time that I wrote Divine Appointment, I was engaged, and my fiancé actually suffered a stroke. So those were things that I lived through, you know, back and forth to therapy and, you know, going back and forth to the hospital and everything that I put in there and, you know, all the issues that are in the back of your mind. If somebody doesn't pull through, then what? You know, what about end-of-life decisions? What about power of attorney? What about funeral arrangements?
Wow.
And so that book has just been such a blessing to people. I had a friend down in Alabama that said she kept copies in her funeral home. She was a funeral director. And when people would come in, you know, wanting to know how to prepare an obituary or, you know, what to, she would just, you know, give them complimentary copies.
Yeah, and I think
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, and there have been people in my family, you know, somebody will die, and they will call me up immediately and say, you know what, I can't lay my hands on Divine Appointment. Can you get me one over here?
Mm.
I mean, it covers everything. It covers everything,
wow.
You know, about death and dying.
Yeah, I think that, and that's something that we don't like to think about.
Right,
when it
right.
happens, it's for many times, I mean, you're either caring for somebody that you see their health constantly going down, declining,
mm-hmm.
or it can happen suddenly. Like I know when my mom passed,
yeah.
it can happen suddenly, and you are like, you have no idea what to do next. So
I think a
book like this would really be helpful to people as you're grieving and dealing with the strong, strong emotions you're feeling, and then just to do the legal things, the things that you need to do as far as this is helpful, so you don't have to. I think it's helpful because you're in a highly, highly emotional.
And it's stressful, and, you know, and I tell people, get this book and read it before something happens.
Yes.
Because when something happens and you're in a, you know, in that heightened emotional
yes.
state and you can't function and, you know, and if you're sick, you don't want to read a book so much about sickness, but if you get sick and you already know what to look
yes.
for and what this entails, you know, it benefits you more. And so I tell people all the time, you know, when I was, the book was going real strong when it first came out, and people were telling me, you know, people emailed me from New York, from everywhere, and they were saying, you know what, we just lost our aunt, and we bought your book, and it really helped us. Or, you know, Carol and Brenda of C&B Books up in New York, they were going through, you know, something with a family member, and they were telling me how, you know, the book helped them. You know, they didn't even know that they were going to be thrust into this situation, but, you know, they bought the book when the book came out, and, you know, when it came time, they had everything right there.
Oh, my goodness. When you said that, knowing in advance, there's a book called Stroke of Insight, and this is by Arthur, who was a neurologist, out of Indiana. I think she lived close to like the Bloomington, Indiana area.
Mm-hmm.
But she talks. She said if she hadn't been a neurologist and known about, you know, a stroke, her recovery, and it took her 7 years to fully recover, but she said
wow.
her recovery probably would have, she doesn't know how it would have gone. So it's interesting, when you said that, I thought about that. When you know about something before it happens,
yeah.
you have that knowledge, and it makes it, as tough as it is, it does make it a lot better.
Oh, yeah, it makes it easier. It makes it easier. And that's just like when I was at Crown Hill and I was interviewing the director and actually shadowed the director. And, you know, that's when I found out that at the point of death, if somebody dies at home and they wear dentures, it's really important that you get those dentures back in, or when the mortician or whoever comes to send those dentures, because after so long a time and rigor mortis sets in and those bones and everything, you know, the jaw stiffens, it's difficult to get them back in. And a lot of times you go to a funeral and somebody's jaws are all sunken and everything, mm-hmm. even though they have what they call risers that they can put in. If you've seen somebody with dentures and you know how they look, they're going to look different.
Yeah.
You know, and like moistening parts of the body with Vaseline that dry out quickly. You know, there are just so many little things that you're supposed to do if a patient dies at home to try to help preserve that body.
Mm. Which do you like creating best, Dolores, fiction or nonfiction, if you had to make a choice?
Now, that's difficult. That is really difficult because I've thoroughly enjoyed both. And like okay. now I'm dabbling into Christian fiction and Christian nonfiction. And I will say that I enjoy Christian writing more so than just secular or, you know, the
okay.
other writing.
Okay. I want to talk about each of your books, and you have so many titles. I wanted you next to talk to us briefly so our listeners here at Off the Shelf get the full gamut of your work that you've published so far. What is Airing Dirty Linen? If you could tell us what Airing Dirty Linen is about.
Well, Airing Dirty Linen is an idea that came to me a couple years ago. It's still in the writing stage. I've not finished it, and I keep telling myself between semesters of school, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to finish it. But the premise is that there are four cousins, and they suddenly come into a lot of money when their parents are killed in an automobile accident. And they invest that in a bed and breakfast here in Indianapolis on Allisonville Road. But they have so many different skeletons that start coming out of the closet and, you know, so many things that they have to deal with.
Okay.
And, you know, there is the twin brothers, and one of them is a church trustee, and there's a problem with funds coming up missing in the church.
Say no more. As soon as you said trustee, I said okay. I
yes, yes. I mean they're going through, but and that's Christian fiction. So I'm really enjoying that because you know I put so much time and effort into discovering my spiritual gifts and into my church these days. So
okay.
you know anything Christian fiction or nonfiction, really, you know, I'm
okay.
really into that.
Well, tell us about a memorable character, a character in Airing Dirty Linen that readers simply will love and never forget. Tell us about a character that sticks with you and has stick with a reader.
One of the characters that I really like, and it's not the main character, but it's Eternity. And she's a 16-year-old, and so she's going through a lot of problems. You know, she doesn't have her parents. She just has her older cousin, Nairobi,
mm-hmm.
and she's really going through. And she finds out how she got the name Eternity, and it just really just shatters her world.
Wow. Oh
yeah, and it has to do with online paternity.
Oh.
Thus the E.
Interesting. Yeah. Oh, what a clever. Dolores just left us a little teaser here at Off the Shelf for Airing Dirty Linen. Okay. All right. And again, her books are available at Amazon.com. Ida May, her sequel, Ida May, Babe, Anybody Seen Junebug, Airing Dirty Linen, which we just talked about, and A Caregiver's Divine Appointment, A Caregiver's Guide, which is a nonfiction book that'll help prepare you dealing with, you know, the passing of a loved one. Your next book leads into an area that I want to focus on for writers and readers who might be interested either now or sometime in the future publishing their own books, because I know your next book gives very solid advice and tips on publishing, marketing, and promotion, something I know you are very, very good at. So before we get into that, I want to talk a little bit about your community work, but we are going to talk about Dolores Thornton's book that deals with publishing, marketing, and promotion, an excellent book. But first, again, I want to talk about your community work. I know in 2005 you won the 9th Annual Joy Awards for your community service. You are just an amazing woman, Dolores. I got to tell you this. I have always thought this of you. Just every time I've met you or connected with you, your spirit has always been so full of love. I know you volunteered as a mentor with the Marion County Probation Department. If you could just tell us a little bit, first, thank you for doing that work, because I know it blessed people's lives. But what type of work did you do with the Marion County Probation Department?
Well, actually, I was at a Martin Luther King celebration years ago, and they had vendors from different, you know, community organizations, and I passed by a table, and a lady stopped me and asked me to pick up a brochure about mentoring, and, you know, I didn't know anything about the program. I read it, and, you know, she said, well, you know, don't decide now, but come by to one of our meetings, and so I promised her that I would, and I've always been a person that, of my word, you know, I like to keep my word, and mm-hmm. so I had already decided I've got too much on my plate, I can't do this, but I'm going to go by and see what the program is about. And when I got there, there were about 25 young people between the ages of 16 and 22 that were on probation. The majority of them were African-American, and the volunteers had come that were going to be mentors, and I think there may have been one African-American and maybe about eight or nine, you know, Caucasians. So, you know, I knew I wasn't going to leave there and not volunteer to help, you know. And I don't know if the racial, you know, makeup had anything to do with it, but I felt embarrassed, you know, in a way. And so, you know, I told her that I would agree to become a mentor. And so I started going to all the meetings. And what it was like a safety net for people that were out on probation to steer them in the right direction and keep them from violating and going back in, getting caught up into the system again. And it really was a fulfilling work because, I mean, I sit there and I cried as these young people, you know, really just poured out their hearts. And there were, you know, young girls that were out prostituting and selling crack because they couldn't get a job once they had been convicted of a felony and they had kids. They had babies to feed.
I've heard people in the legal system or say that, you know, you try to get back on your feet, but won't nobody hire you.
Yeah,
you end up going
difficult.
Right back into the life. Well, we have to do more to encourage people to offer them chances and opportunities,
right?
So that those who really do. Now, some people are not going to take advantage of the chance, but the people mm-hmm. who really do want to, and I think they're more than people might imagine, that they will have the opportunity to get a second chance and get back out, get back.
Well, they
on
deserve
the
a second chance.
Yes, exactly. Because we all make mistakes. Some of us get
caught. And if you're 17, you're 17, my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your whole life ahead of you for somebody to say you can never work on a decent job again because you have this felony.
Yes, I so agree. And thank you again for doing that work. I wanted to ask you, did you use any of your books when you did this mentoring, working with the people at the Marion County Probation Department? Because I can see how the plots to some of your books, the struggles that your characters go through and overcome could help somebody as they're going through their own personal experiences. Did you incorporate your books in the mentoring process?
No, I didn't actually incorporate the books, but, you know, I shared life experiences and things like that. And then some of the other mentors, administrators, you know, they heard that I was a writer and they, you know, they purchased some of the books. But whether or not they incorporated it in their sessions, you know, I don't know. But I didn't use them for any of the, you know, any of the my mentees.
All right. I can see how they could be a blessing to people. I know you also are a graduate, and you've alluded to this earlier in our interview, of the Long Ridge Writers Group of West Reading, Connecticut, which is you must have done that online, I'm assuming, because that's not near Indianapolis.
Right, right. That was actually correspondence.
Okay.
Do
you recommend, Dolores, that writers take a structured writing course to advance their careers? Would you recommend that to writers?
Yes, I really would, but I would recommend that they take one at their local college. I think you get more with that hands-on and just actually seeing the professor and working, having classmates and everything. You know, even though, you know, I did like Longridge, I wish that I had taken, you know, a class right here in Indianapolis. Like, we have the Writers' Center, and then we have classes at the universities, and so that would be, you know, what I would recommend for people.
Okay.
But I do highly recommend people taking writing classes.
Okay. Now to your next book, which I'm sure all of your books, again, Item A, the sequel to Item A, Babe, Anybody Seen Junebug, Airing Dirty Laundry, The Divine Appointment, The Caregiver's Guide, all of Dolores Thornton's books are just wonderful books. You will fall in love with the characters in her books. You truly will. I wanted to ask you next. This is a book I wanted to focus on. For the marketing, promoting, publishing aspect, as many of our listeners have either recently published a book, might think about publishing their own book, or already have and don't know how to market and promote it. Your next book, How to Self-Publish That Great Novel Without Going Nuts. And I know you definitely had experience to write that book. Do you ever? In 2005, you were voted the queen of promotion by New York City CMB Books. And from my own personal experience with you, I don't know of anybody as an independent publisher who does it better than you, Dolores Thornton. I wanted to ask, where did you gain? You said when I was asking you, okay, how your writing got started. You were sitting on a sofa, and the idea just came to you to write Item A. So it was obviously not something you thought about for like years and years and years.
Oh no, no.
Where did you gain? Because you are so good at it. Where did you gain your promotion and marketing skills? Did you get special training? Did you take a degree and have a degree in marketing or promotion? Where did you learn this from? Because you're so very good at it.
No, I actually, you know, didn't have training in any of that. When I first wrote Item A and when I finished it, and I was saying to myself, okay, I like this story. My sister likes this story. People at work love this story. You know, now what? So then I went to the library and I started reading books on writing books. And I was just so, you know, surprised to discover that the way it was saying the chapters and everything should be set up was what I had done. And so then I decided, okay, what do I do about publishing? And I read books that said, you know what, be prepared to get your work rejected 100 times before somebody will see merit in it. And so I decided I'm not going that route. And so I got I got Dan Pointer's self-publishing book, and I read that. And I was like, okay, I can do this. And so I went downtown, got set up all the things to start my Marguerite Press, my own company.
Yes.
And so after I, you know, and I was like, okay, now what? And by that time, my book was already out. So people were emailing me asking me, how did you do it? What did you do? And so I just didn't have enough time to respond to everybody. So I decided, okay, I'm going to write some news articles. And so the local newspaper, our African-American newspaper, the Indianapolis Recorder, contacted me and said, will you write a column on self-publishing? Because people were starting to call the paper trying to find out how do they do it. So I did that for about 6 months. But then I started getting email requests from all over the world. And I was like, okay, the Recorder is a local paper. So I said, well, I'm going to have to put this in a format where more people can get it. And so that's when I came up with the idea because, you know, everybody was saying, this is driving me crazy, this is driving me crazy. So I said, okay, I'm going to write a book to explain to you how to do it without going nuts. Because there are, especially if you self-publish, because you have the marketing, because then even after I had written the book, and, you know, took it to the printer, had the book printed, had a garage full of them, then I was asking myself, now what? Mm-hmm. And so I started contacting bookstores. I contacted libraries. I started sitting up my own book club discussions and contacting people, you know, throughout the country and going on the cruises. And, you know, so it's like every step I had to figure out, okay, what do I do? What do I do? How do I market? How do I promote? Where do I put flyers? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just a lot of the things didn't work. Most of them did. And then when the radio medium came on, I was like, okay, I'm going to do a – I started going downtown doing a radio show.
Yes.
But what happened, I really hate being out at night driving. In the winter, it was icy and cold.
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, this radio, even though, you know, I was getting calls in from around the nation and it was a good thing, it's just not for me. And so just as soon as I closed down my show here, the internet radio started to open up. And I got a call from a lady says, I've heard about you. I want you to bring your Around to It show to the internet. And I did. And then I went to Artists First. I was the first African-American to get a radio show on Artists First. And now I think it's about 200 of them.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah,
what are some of the topics that are covered in How to Self-Publish That Great Novel Without Going Nuts? What are some of the topics?
Oh, my goodness, everything. ISBN numbers, marketing, promotion, networking, how to contact book clubs, how to prepare a press kit, just writing tips, everything that the new author would need to know.
How
to contact a printer, the printer's quote, everything.
And what should a new writer look for to make sure they're getting a good deal from a printer? Because this is an area where I have seen new writers really get almost what I would call robbed. This is an area where you really need to know what you're doing when you're negotiating and doing your price comparing for a good printer. What should a writer look for in a good printer, Dolores?
I think a writer should look first for quality, because I found that a lot of times people will sacrifice quality for what they think is a good price.
Okay.
And I think they should, you know, opt first for quality, because for a self-publisher, it's going to be difficult, you know, and you're going to be judged harshly anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to get out a quality work. So I think they should, you know, try to find out somebody that has a good quality and then start comparing rates.
You made a good point when you said, and I didn't even think of this, but an excellent point when you said, you know what, you're going to be judged harshly anyway. I think that has improved over the years, but I remember when I first came out and with you and Maxine Thompson and,
mm-hmm.
and other writers, Tracy Price Thompson. Self-publishing or independent publishing was really frowned upon.
Really?
I think a lot of that was the major publishers didn't want a competitor out there on the street, but now it's not frowned on as much, but it was
mm-hmm.
initially. So it's a good point when you said you really want to put out a good work, because coming out the gate, somebody's going to look at you thinking, this probably is not half what, even though you would be the same writer if you were with a big publisher.
Right,
you're not
right.
a different writer. You just got a different publishing house name on the book. That's the only
right.
difference.
Mm-hmm.
But you would be judged negatively for some reason by a lot of folks. Again, that has changed, but good point. Put out a very good book, because it helps you stand on the same level and the same ground with somebody who's same talent you have, but they're coming out with a major publishing house name attached to their book. How soon, Dolores, would you say a writer should start getting the word out about their new book? I myself, when I first came in as an independent publisher, was told, you know, 6 months. You really should start getting the word out about that book. But from your experience, how soon would you say, some writers wait till after the book's published, which I think is maybe too late, but what would you say they should start getting that word out about their new book?
I tell people to get the word out as soon as possible. You
mm-hmm.
know, like I said, I started printing up flyers and everything. And even when I write a book, whatever my next idea is going to be in the back of that book.
Okay.
You know, you want to put it on somebody's mind as soon as possible. You know, even if you decide, okay, I'm not going to finish this work, I'm going to go to another one, still you've left that idea in someone's
mm-hmm.
mind when they finished one book to be on the lookout whenever this comes out. I like this book. I like this author. They're going to have another work, and, you know, I'm going to be watching for it.
Well, interesting. As soon as possible, get that on somebody's mind. And
mm-hmm.
and then they may start talking to it about other people. Or when they see it again, when you bring it out.
Then they'll remember. Yeah,
it'll be familiar. It'll be like a familiar ring
yes.
to it.
Very good point.
Very good point
yes.
for our listeners here at Off the Shelf who are authors or thinking of becoming an author. Very interesting point. If you're a reader and not a writer, and you know a friend who's a writer, it's a good tidbit to pass along to them here from Dolores Thornton. I wanted to ask you, before I go in and talk about your book fest, what have you found to be most effective and spreading the word about books, press releases, radio, blogging, et cetera? Or would you say that for each author it might be something different? Because like you said, and I've experienced, you try as many things as the ideas that come to you. Some things will work and some things might not work. But which have you found to be more effective in getting the word out about your titles?
Well, I think it's a combination of all of those things, a combination of the press release and the word of mouth and, you know, getting out, hitting the pavement, leaving flyers in businesses. You know, it's just a combination of everything that I think it has really worked for me. But early on when I first started, it had to have been word of mouth because, you know, I worked in a very busy main branch of the Postal Service, and so I had about 2,000 people. You know, that were right there with me, that were just excited as I was on all shifts, you know, buying books and telling their family. And, you know, I found out one day we were working and this guy came up there and he said, a bag just came in and it's full of Item A flyers. And I was like, it's full of what? Come to find out the mail handlers that were over there on the belts and stuff, they were going printing up copies of my flyers with their own money, sending them out in the mail.
Oh, glory.
Yeah. And so, you know, I couldn't even have paid for that type, you know. I couldn't have paid. And then as I started touring, every city that I went to the main branch of the Postal Service, and they were just very receptive.
Oh, wow, what a blessing. Oh, my goodness. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
If you could just talk a little bit, this is an amazing woman we have here with us today here at Off the Shelf. If you could just talk a little bit about Book Fest, like a book fair that for our listeners that you started in Indianapolis, if I'm not mistaken, it was the first one in the city. Could you tell us how you got that off the ground, how you got the idea to do it, and what's the status of the Book Fest as of today?
Well, actually, I had been touring the country during that time, as I said, and I had been going to book fairs and book festivals, and I was going to the Baltimore Book Fair, and every time I would come back home, I would say, why can't we have something like this in Indianapolis? Why do I have to travel to San Francisco and Chicago and D.C. and everything to, you know, partake of something like this? We don't have anything like this in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to some of the area businesses. The first place that I went to was Indianapolis Marion County Public Library because I have a friend that was a branch manager. And as I traveled, I had become very close to librarians in other cities. And, you know, they had hosted me and hosted various things. And so, you know, my friend Ruby was really receptive to the idea. And so we decided we were going to put on a book fest here in Indianapolis. So we went to like the Indiana Arts Commission. We went to one of the larger malls and went to the Indiana Historical Society, and I had to do a presentation. I actually had to give it about 3 times before they agreed to let us have it there, but, you know, everybody was telling me they didn't understand how I did it to rent that facility for a day. It was $5,000. We got it for nothing.
Oh,
you know, it included the theater. We had people perform, do parts of their works, or, you know, a live play on stage. We had the marble column atrium. We had the Lilly boardroom upstairs. They just turned over the whole facility.
Wow.
And so we had other funeral homes and iUniverse and Arthur House. They sponsored. You know, I went to them, and I think that they both said it was the first time they had sponsored a literary event.
Oh, my goodness.
And now I see online that they participate in book fairs and book fests around the country, but that one was the first one that they participated in. They sent representatives here, and it was just really a nice thing. And people came from all over the country, and we had that for like three or four years. And then last year, like I said, I was finishing up classes at, you know, Simmons Bible College, and I really didn't, you know, have the time, so we didn't have it this year at all.
Okay, but it's just amazing how you got the idea, because I know you traveled a lot extensively
to,
you know, market and promote your own books, and then you just thought, you know, why don't we have something like this? And something that I really like, Dolores, and you mentioned it when you went to you didn't think you had the time when you went to the Marion County Probation Department and you saw, you know what, I'm the only person of African-American heritage. I'm going to volunteer, and I'm sure you did it for other reasons, just to help another human being out, regardless of their ethnicity. And then you also you said, you know what, why don't we have anything like this in Indianapolis? A lot of us would say, why don't we have anything like this, and complain as if somebody else should do it.
Yeah.
You seem
yeah.
to take the approach, which I think is a blessing, you seem to take the approach of, no, why don't we have it? I'm not going to sit here and complain. Why doesn't someone else do it? I'm going to be the one to do it. So I commend you highly for that. That is really a blessed trait that you have, and highly commend you for it. Next thing I wanted to ask you in regards to the marketing and promotion, writing a book is difficult enough, but then you got to really get down, roll up your sleeves, and start selling those books. But
yes.
Do you think writers should have a personal website? Years ago, you know what, 10 years ago, I think about ad somebody this, they probably say, eh. But now, I'm curious, do you think writers should have a personal website, Dolores?
Yes, I really do. I really do. I think they should have a personal website just for the simple fact that this is the age in which we now live, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people connect. People like to go to the website and see what's there. And you can do a lot of your marketing and advertising. And you can just get the word out so much easier than, you know, when we started out and you
mm-hmm.
just had to physically be everywhere at the same
yes.
time and you were exhausted, especially if you had a family and a job.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the internet really just really leveled the playing ground, just like I started the e-tours a couple years ago, and, you know, people would go to different sites, and I lined up all the different sites to be on eTour, and, you know, that was really, really popular because it was a lot easier to do than getting in your car or getting a plane and going
mm-hmm.
flying back and forth all over town. You could just put everything that you wanted on these e-stops along the way.
Mm-hmm. You have a very creative mind. Some of the things you think up, or you look at something else and the idea comes to you. One thing I would definitely encourage our listeners, whether they're writers, business people, working for another firm, have an entrepreneurial spirit, I encourage you, like Dolores has done, when you get these ideas, to act upon them and not just think about it and let it swirl around in your head, but to act upon it and not wait for other people to do. When you hear yourself say or complain and say this should be done, that you sometimes make yourself the one who actually does do it instead of thinking somebody else should do it. I know you also worked at Black Reefer, and while you were there, you helped to promote other people's works. I wanted to ask you how you got – Dolores, you just are amazing. How did you get over to that site? And you were a leader over there. How did you get there?
Well, you know what? I was surfing the internet one day, and I came across that site, and it was just so – the guy's name is Woody. He had so much information on that blackrefer.com, and then he was doing these little slides, and he had places for literary experts, and then he had poetry, and he had models. He had everything there, and so – I was like, okay, why don't you feature some, you know, why don't you feature some authors? And he was like, well, I don't have anybody that can do that, that can review or, you know, do a little preview or, you know, look. And I said, well, you know what, I can try it out, and, you know, we can see what we can do with it. And so I would have people emailing me saying, how do I get on there, how do I get on there? And so I would, you know, have them send me the little excerpts of their work, and I would email it to him, and then I decided, okay, I'm going to interview authors, because I was just always trying to do all that I could for especially new authors to get them more exposure, and this
mm-hmm.
was really one of the highest-hitting websites,
yeah.
you know, literary websites,
yeah.
and so I was like, this will be good for people to get this, and so, you know, I started doing that, and then I came up with the idea, why don't we have the Black Reefer Literary Awards once a year in each category,
mm-hmm.
you know, of all the books that I had reviewed for the year, because at that time I was reviewing books for Booking Matters, I was reviewing books for the Indiana Herald newspaper, so I was doing a lot of reading and reviewing,
mm-hmm.
and so on Black Reefer, I would just list, you know, my best reads for the year in all categories, and people loved it, but he just got so busy, like everybody else, he had so much going on, and he was trimming down the site, and I totally understood,
mm-hmm.
you know,
you,
so
oh my
you know,
God,
we
Dolores,
discontinued that about 2 years ago.
you will never run out of things to do. Your mom.
No, never,
you
never.
Looking from sitting on a sofa to writing a novel. It started as a short story to taking writing courses to mentoring at the Marion County Probation Department to writing for newspapers to the internet to touring the whole country to the e-tours to the Marguerite Press to starting the Indianapolis Book Fest to working in radio and on and on and on it goes. I wanted to ask you, you also, and we mentioned this earlier, hosted your own radio show Around to It. And again, to our listeners, and I say this specifically for women, Dolores is a mother, she is a grandmother and a great-grandmother, and you can hear, you know, the good energy in her and what she is doing. So to be encouraged as you listen to her. She's actually somebody who's doing it. She's not a fictional character. She's a real-life woman doing all of these things, following, you know, acting on their ideals and helping others out as she also goes after her own dreams. I know you had a Round to It that started off the internet, and I remember you interviewed me once, and you were telling me about, you know, this snow thing wasn't really
yes.
in the snow. But for authors who are nervous or scared, some authors, you know, promoting is a frightening thing for them, Dolores. And you know, you and you've been doing radio, and I've been doing radio for a while. But some people are terrified to do a radio interview, let alone a television interview. And I mean, scared
right.
where their knees would be clanging together. But what tips would you give to somebody so that they can allow themselves to enjoy, you know, speaking publicly, whether it's radio, television, or just getting up and talking to people in public, so they're not so afraid and they can go get a little more ground with their marketing and promoting?
Well, I would just advise people to just sort of like relax, but they need to, if you're not used to public speaking or if you're not used to speaking on radio or something, I would tell people to get a tape recorder, to tape themselves, play it back, listen to the ums, the ahs, the dead space, you know, when they really don't come in on cue or they leave the host, you know, with nothing to say because they're waiting on an answer from them. And even with TV, you know, look in the mirror, look at some old tapes if you have one, of, you know, study it, you know, what you did right, what you did wrong, you know, what to wear. And just, you know, I don't know, I used to give tips on my, you know, on my site about, you know, try to contact with the interviewer ahead of time. If you're going on TV, try to find out what the questions are going to be. You know, a lot of times they have, like, the canned interview, and they will tell you what they're going to say to you. But, you know, people like you and I, you know, just come straight off the cuff, and we don't need that. But if you're new or if you're nervous, you might need to find out, okay, what are you going to ask me?
Right.
You know, find out exactly how long the interview is going to be. When you go to the set, find out, which camera am I looking at? You know, don't get there and be looking all around like you don't understand or you don't know what's really going on.
I would say that for television, I agree. Ask which camera should I be looking into.
Yeah.
I definitely, that is a very, very good tip that you just gave. And a good host would you know, if they know you're new, they're going to make
right.
sure you're prepared.
Yeah.
But if they don't ask those questions.
Sometimes they don't, and sometimes you can get a new host.
Exactly. Then you should be the one to make, which camera
right.
should I be looking into so that people aren't watching you at home thinking, what is she looking
at? Yeah, what is she doing?
Dolores, I so miss reading your new books. We have 7 minutes left. I miss reading your new books and seeing your name around, you know, the internet the way I used to. And I know you have got a full plate. Just finished another course, you know, in your Bible and your Christian study. I wanted to ask, are you working on any new material as far as any new books? And if so, when can we expect to see a new book from you on the market?
Well, early in spring of next year, 2010, I'd like to have Erin Dirty Linen out.
Oh,
because
okay.
I'm finishing up all the manuscripts and everything on that. I know how it ends, but I have to, you know, pull it together and get it ready because, like I said, I had stopped for so long, you know, continuing my Bible classes. And, you know, our church secretary left, and so I'm now the secretary of our church. I was already the Christian Education Director and the new members assimilator.
Oh, my God.
So,
I was the secretary at our church, so you don't even have to tell me.
That's
what all
a
that
job.
Is.
Isn't that
yes,
a job?
Yes, it is. Yes, ma'am, that is a job.
So, I'm always going to put, you know, my work for the Lord first.
Yes.
So, you know, in my available time, the little time that I have left, my spare time, I hope to complete this because I love Airing Dirty Linen, and I'm sure that readers will like it as well.
So March of 2010, is there a website or an area where people can go to check? Like they say, I want to check in February, I want to check in March to see if Dolores Thornton's new book, Airing
Dirty.
Well,
no, actually, I'm working on my site because I had taken, last year when I was, you know, getting ready to graduate from school and was so busy in finals, and I hate to see old, stale sites, I had taken all my sites down, and I had like five of them just scattered everywhere, and I took them all down concentrating, and so then I just put up a new experimental site just trying to see, but it really doesn't contain my literary works. I won't do that until next week.
Oh, okay. Okay, mm-hmm. So people will can by February you will have a website out.
Oh yeah.
If you shoot me the URL,
by December I'll have it up.
Oh okay.
Yeah.
You shoot me the URL, I can let our listeners know, and also in the newsletter the book lovers have, so they can look for your new books. I'm sure a lot of people who've read Ida May and Babe, anybody seen Junebug will, and your other works will be excited to read and know that you have a new title coming out, Airing Dirty Linen, in the spring of next year. That is just so wonderful.
Yes.
I am looking forward to getting your book. And then, again, to our listeners here at Off the Shelf, Dolores Thornton's books are available at Amazon.com. Ida May saga continues, Babe, Anybody Seen Junebug, and her Divine Appointment, The Caregiver's Guide, and How to Self-Publish a Book Without Going Nuts, where she covers, you know, the getting the ISBN, the copyright, marketing and promoting. And this is a woman who definitely knows about marketing and promoting a book. As we come down to the last 4 minutes of our show, I want to ask you this. I kind of alluded to it earlier. When we first started, you know, as independent publishers, the internet wasn't as big as it is now. It was big then, but it's really, really grown. How do you see the internet impacting the book business even 2 to 5 years from now?
Oh my goodness. I would imagine that it would even be more more exposure for authors. I would think that sales would continue to grow through the internet, and, you know, like I said, it's always been a viable tool for new authors, self-published authors, because, you know, it's just right there. It's just, you know, people can just go straight to your site. You know, you may have limited access to other avenues or bookstores, or may not be able to travel, and so I really see, you know, the internet as the marketing tool for, you know, literary works in general, but for new authors in particular.
I know you've traveled a lot, Dolores, and I really want to thank you for the time you spent with us today. You've shared so many tips, and just yourself being here is just a blessing. But for our listeners here who know you, and those who this may be their first introduction to you, Dolores Thornton, can you let us know, do you plan on making any public appearances, any book signings? Are you going to be at any events? I know your book, you're targeting Airing Dirty Linen to come out in March of 2010. Have you started to line up any appearances? If so, could you let us know so our listeners that want to come out and meet you or get an autographed copy of your book can do so?
All right. Probably what I'm going to be working on in the very near future, I forgot to tell you this, but I'm on the board now of the African American History Committee of the Indianapolis Marion County Public Library.
Oh, congratulations.
And so, yes, I got that. I accepted that position back in July. I was really hesitant, but, you know, they felt like I had something to offer to the board, so... And there have been so many people at different branches still wanting how to self-publish tips.
Okay.
And so probably, you know, in the upcoming months, I will be putting together packages and doing something concerning self-publishing, because I've even had about 3 or 4 people locally ask me about self-publishing. And rather than try to get one-on-one appointments with 3 or 4 people, I would rather just go on and do a workshop. So probably my self-publishing workshop here in the city will be, you know, my next thing, other than next spring when Airing Dirty Linen comes out. I probably will have to hit the road.
All right. As we're coming down to, like, the last minute, I wanted to ask you, and again, thank you so much, Dolores, for being here with us today at Off the Shelf. What last words of encouragement or advice would you like to leave with our wonderful listeners here at Off the Shelf?
I would just like to tell people to, you know, follow their own heart, because oftentimes a dream will come to us, and for some strange reason, we don't want to follow. We're like, okay, this is not for me, or we're afraid of what people might think or of what people might say. And oftentimes, people will even try to suppress your gift, you know, by saying that, you know, it's nothing, it's not worthy. And I would just advise people, if you have a dream, that's your dream. So,
wow.
You know, just do what you can to bring, you know, your good works out.
Oh, what a blessing. That was worth even for myself. Thank you so much. Dolores Thorne, the author of Ida May, Ida May, The Saga Continues, Babe, Anybody Seen Junebug, Divine Appointment, A Caregiver's Guide, How to Self-Publish a Book Without Going Nuts, and she definitely knows about that. And Airing Dirty Linen, which look for it. I'll let her, as soon as her new website's up, I will let you guys know what the URL is, and at the newsletter, the Book Lovers Tavern, so you can go over. And in March of 2010, look for Airing Dirty Linen. And if she puts up some events she's going to be at, you can go there and meet her in person and get an autographed copy. To our listeners here at Off the Shelf, thank you so much for being here with us listening to Off the Shelf today. Please tell your family, friends, colleagues, and book lovers everywhere to tune in to us here at Blog Talk Radio. We will continue to bring you interviews with established, best-selling, up-and-coming writers, producers, editors, agents, and other movers and shakers in the book business. Please visit me online at www.chistell.com, and please pick up a copy of my new book, Long Walk Up, which is available at chistell.com, or you can get it by requesting a copy through your local bookstore. Again, thank you so much, and thank you to Dolores Thornton for tuning in to Off the Shelf today. Remember that you are so valued, loved, and truly blessed. Keep writing and reading great books. And Dolores, I'll shoot you an email. Thank you so much,
Thanks for having me. Thank you, Denise. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.